I would like to talk about old Uyghur divination literature and its relationship with Chinese tradition. So the Turkish speakers stem from the today's Mongolia, and most of them lived there as nomads. Already in the 3rd century, the activity of the nomadic tribe Gaoshe, which very probably spoke a kind of Turkish language, was reported in Chinese sources, but the first verifiable Turkish nomadic empire was founded by the tribe called Tuzhue in the middle of 6th century in Mongolia. This Turkish tribe was also famous for the fact that it was the first tribe who wrote down Turkish with its own script called Turkish runic script. It is still in discussion when Tuzhue began to use this script and how the script was developed. Up to now, most of the stone monuments in Turkish runic script can be dated in the 7th and 8th century, and they definitely count as the first written sources of Turkish literature. So you can see here one of this example. It's a little difficult to see, but it's the runic script. If you can see some of them, it's quite suitable to cut on the stone monument. And most of the Turkish sources which are written with this script as a stone monument. Because of their nomadic lifestyle, however, they did not leave many written evidences which could inform us about their divination tradition. It is an important but difficult question what kind of belief Tuzhue had at that time. Recently, some scholars began to use a special terminology for nomadic religion, Tengrism, which should be clearly distinguished from animism or shamanism. In their opinion, the nomads like Tuzhue, Uyghurs, or later Mongols had a belief which strongly focused on the heaven god, in Old Turkish, Tengri, and the existence of shamans in their society could not be attested. In fact, Tengri, heaven, is quite often mentioned in the stone inscriptions which Tuzhue or the Uyghurs left. Thus, it surely occupied a special position in their belief. On the other hand, several Chinese sources suggest the activity of shamans or similar, so that that new thesis still needs further detailed and careful investigations. Needless to say, one of the most important functions of shamans is the divination. In this context, the following passage in chapter EU of the Chinese chronicle Choshu is worthy to mention. So here you can see the original one, and I would like to read just the German translation, sorry, it's German, from Liu Mozai. Wenn ein neuer Herrscher gewählt wurde, trugen ihm die hohen Würdenträger aus seiner nächsten Umgebung in einer Filzdecke und drehten ihm dann der Sonne folgend 9-mal. Bei jeder Drehung verbeugten sich alle seine Untertanen vor ihm. Nach dem Drehung und Verbeugungen halfen sie dem Oberhäuptling aufs Pferd und ließen ihm leiden. Daraufhin bürgten sie ihm mit einem seidenen Tuch so, dass er gerade noch am Leben blieb. Dann lösten sie die Binde und fragten ihn hastig, wie viele Jahre wirst du unser Kagan sein? Da der Kagan benommen war, konnte er die Zeitdauer nicht deutlich sagen. Darauf schlossen sie aus den Worten, die er vor Wollen dabei ausgestoßen hatten, auf seine Amtsdauer. the whole process which had to be done as a ceremony for the entronization has a big similarity with Sharma's prediction, although in this case the new ruler himself acted as a kind of Sharma. It seems to have been believed amongst the Tujue that the chosen high-ranking people like those from the king and queen clans had that kind of the supernatural power which made it possible to give the divination. As a further evidence for this assumption, I would like to mention the famous Turco-Sogdian general, An Lushan. He first worked for Chinese emperor of the Tang Dynasty as a military commander, and later became the leader of a serious rebellion. Originally, he, however, was born as a son of a woman from the Ashide clan under the Tujue rule in Mongolia. The Ashide clan was well known as those who gave the queens to the Tujue ruler from the ruling Ashina clan. About An Lushan's birth, his Chinese biography told us an interesting story. An Lushan was a mixed barbarian from Incheon. His childhood name was Yaroshan. His mother of the Ashide clan was a Turkish shaman. She had no son and prayed to Yaroshan. The god answered and he was born. On that night, a red light stone by his side, all the wild animals howled around about. Astrologers saw the beam of the star of evil magic fall on the tent. Though the descriptions in Chinese sources indicate the possible existence of shamans and their activities, including divinations. Already in the period of Tujue, so it is 6th to 9th century, the Turks probably had a divination tradition as their own culture based on their original belief. The leadership of the Tujue was kept around about 200 years, although in the middle of that period they had to enter under Chinese control for around 50 years. In 745, however, the other Turkish tribe, the Uyghurs, took their leadership over and became the new ruler in Mongolia and Central Asia. In the period of this powerful nomadic empire, which we call the East Uyghur Khaganate, the relevant and epoch-making change happened in regard to the belief of Turkish speakers. At first, the Uyghurs seems to have had the same traditional belief like the Tujue, but the third ruler, called Bugyu Khagan, met Manichaean monks and decided to accept their religion. Manichaeism was founded in the 3rd century by Mani in Babylonia and the Sasanian Empire, and was based on the Gnosis belief, which has dualism as an important basic concept. Thus, in Manichaeism, the world was explained as a continuous fight between the light and the darkness, and Manichaeans have to release the light elements caught in different things of the world as much as possible. When Mani founded this religion, he was favored by Sasanian King Shapur I. Although the king himself remained in his own belief, very probably Zoroastrianism, Mani got the permission to mission in the territory of Sasanian Empire freely. But the successor of Shapur I, was not in favor of Mani and captured him. At last, Mani died in the prison. In that difficult situation in Sasanian Empire, many Manichaeans decided to escape to the eastern and western regions, and their mission in the eastern regions reached China at last. Especially, for the Eastern mission, the Sogdians, Iranian-speaking people, played an important role. The Sogdians stem from the Sogdiana, today's Uzbekistan and Tajikistan, and were famous for their successful commercial activities on the so-called Silk Road. In addition, they often acted as advisors on the side of the nomadic rulers. The connection with them was surely one of the motivations which led the third Uyghur ruler, Bugu Kagam, to the conversion to Manichaeism. This dramatic change was not necessarily accepted by all ruling members of the East Uyghur Khaganate, and Bugu Kagam was murdered together with his Sogdian Manichaean followers. After several non-Manichaean rulers, however, Manichaeism successfully got the continuous support from the Uyghur rulers, so that this religion enjoyed its florescence at the first time of his church history. It is also recorded in the stone monument which was built by the 8th Uyghur ruler, but it does not contain any information of the Uyghur divination tradition, which was possibly influenced by their new religion, Manichaeism. The Uyghurs ruled Mongolia and Central Asia as the most powerful nomadic empire, and also exerted a strong influence on the Chinese Tang Dynasty at that time. But suddenly, in 840, the empire collapsed because of the attack of another nomadic tribe, Kyrgyz, and most Uyghurs decided to migrate eastward. A big group went into the eastern Tian Shan area and founded their new kingdom, the West Uyghur Kingdom, in the second half of the 9th century. The center of this kingdom was put on Kocho and Beshbalik, today in the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous People's Republic of China. After their migration, the Uyghurs still kept their Manichaean worship for a while. In the West Uyghur Kingdom, they became sedentary in steppes and began to write their language, Old Uyghur, on the papers. At first, they went on using the Turkish runic script, which they adapted from the Tuzre as their main script, but it was slowly replaced by their own one, the Uyghur script, which was developed from the Sogdian one. Because of this change, the number of written sources in Old Uyghur increased remarkably, although it cannot be compared with Chinese sources, which were often gathered and kept systematically. So, but still, the numbers became so dramatically bigger than comparing with the former time. So here you can see the connected maps. They were in Mongolia, and after their Khaganate was crossed, they moved to this Turfan area. And some impression from Turfan, it's an oasis city. And there are several Uyghur script, which you can see it's the Sogdian script, of which gave the inspiration to the Uyghur script, the mother of the Uyghur script, so-called. Sogdian script is normally written or often written in this direction, vertically, horizontally, but Uyghur script always vertically. So it's Uyghur script, very beautiful one. It's also a Uyghur script, which is not so, which is written not so very carefully. So most of those old Uyghur texts were found by the archaeological expeditions, which were sent by European countries, Japan and China, at the beginning of the 20th century. Especially Germany sent four expeditions and excavated intensively in the Turfan area, one of the center of the West Uyghur Kingdom. As a result, We now hold in Berlin one of the biggest collection of old Uyghur texts, around 8,000 fragments from Central Asia. Among the old Uyghur texts, we can find several texts showing a close relationship with divination. A text which was surely written before 1000 AD can be regarded as one of the earliest divination texts written in Old Uyghur. This text, called Ilkbitik, the Book of Om, was found in 97 by Sir Orestein in Dunfang, the neighbor oasis city of Dunfang, and is now kept in the British Library under the signature OR8212-161. It is a small booklet about 13.6 cm high and 8 cm wide, consisting of 29 folded sheets. This Omen book consists of 65 chapters, each of them are headed by three groups of small circles, which were followed by the text of each Om. The text generally ends with a judgment whether it is good or bad, although for some omens, this important part is lacking. So here you can see one example of seed. You can see it's the beginning. So the beginning, it is given how the omen looks like, and here is the main text. And at last, it is given whether the omen is good or not. The connection between the Ilkbitik and the omen books in other languages were already well discussed. Before the beginning of the Ilkbitik's first omen and after the end of its text, two different Chinese texts are written. In addition, the page numbers of Ilkbitik are added with Chinese characters. Those facts rather indicate the possibility that Ilkbitik or its author or scribe had a certain relationship with Chinese tradition. But both Chinese texts were definitely written after the finishing of the Ilkbitik individually. And the Chinese page numbers just pointed out that the book binder was Chinese. According to its colophon, the Ilkbitik was even produced in the Manichaean circumstances. So you can see here the colophons, here original, not original, but transcribed old Uyghur colophon, and the below side is the translation. In the year of the tiger, on the 15th day of the second month, I, the humble monk of the Tai Gyun Tam Monastery, after listening to the Omen Master, wrote this down for our elder brother, the affectionate General Itachuk. The terminology, Manistan, here. It means monastery, and Dintao, monk, are characterized as Manichaean, so that it is very likely that the scribe had a certain relationship with Manichaean worship. As mentioned above, since their conversion to Manichaeism in the middle of the 8th century, the Uyghurs kept their belief even after their migration into Eastern Tianshan area for a while. Thus, it is not really remarkable that we can see a certain connection with Manichaean circumstances in Ilkbitik at that time. But Manichaean teaching, which is based on the dualism between the light and darkness, does not reflect it in any own, obviously. So we can see just several examples of Ilkbitik Om. For example, it's the Omen 8. I'm golden-headed snake, cutting my gold stomach with a sword, pluck myself out of its hole and pluck my head out of its horse, it says, no, thus the omen is bad. we can see also the good one. There comes a messenger on the yellow horse and an envoy on a dark brown horse, bringing good tidings. It says, know that the omen is extremely good. And others, it's not very clear whether it is good or not. A devout old woman remained alone in the a deserted camp. She kept herself alive by licking a grassy ladder, and thus she escaped death. It says, know thus. Hope good. Some scholars even point out a certain similarity with the Tibetan dice divination, because many judgments are given ambiguously, as it is often the case for omen books. It is difficult to investigate the cultural background of every judgment, but considering the fact that omens often mention forces and livestock which played an important role, especially in the nomadic life, it is probable that the Rigvedic was written on the base of the folksy culture which was shared by the different nomadic tribes in Central Asia. The cultural contact between Uyghurs and Chinese became closer and more direct after the establishment of the West Uyghur Kingdom in Tufan area, second half of the 9th century. In this region, Chinese traditionally lived so that a part of them came under the Uyghur rule. In addition, the Chinese government in Dunfang was established at almost the same time and began to have the diplomatic relationship with its neighborhood, the West Uyghur Kingdom. The most obvious Chinese influence is the introduction of Buddhism among the Uyghurs. Although it owed not only the Chinese influence, but it played an important role without any doubt. Instead of Manichaeism, which was the main religion for the Uyghurs since its introduction in Mongolia, Buddhism got in the second half of the 10th century over at the beginning of the 11th century the position of a kind of state religion among the Uyghurs. Buddhism enjoyed its florescence continuously until the 14th century, and during this long period, a huge amount of Buddhist texts were written in Old Uyghur using the Uyghur script. So the Old Uyghur Buddhist texts were mostly translated from the other languages, and the main source for them was Chinese. Although the importance of Tocharian, so Indo-European language, and Tibetan languages cannot be ignored. It underlines again the strong Chinese influence on the Uyghurs. Among the Buddhist texts, there are also several texts which show a close relationship with divination. Most of those texts has a tantric characteristic and is often connected with the magic formulas for the protection against diseases and other dangers. Considering their content, they have to be classified as a kind of divination texts, but the Uyghur Buddhists probably did not regard them as divination texts. Their translation was surely not in the framework of the Chinese divination tradition, but rather in that of Buddhist tradition. In contrast, there are several texts which obviously follow the Chinese divination tradition. One of them is the text I Ching. The exact date of origin and the author of this the Chinese I Ching are still unclear, but already in the period of Western Han Dynasty, its major part was probably known. This divination text was used together with 50 bamboo sticks, which show the different signs to give the divination result. The old Uyghur version of such a divination text was already identified shortly after the foundation of the Berlin Turfan collection. So you can see some example here. You can see the here, the signs. Because there is no colophon which can show us the date of the translation over the composition, it remains unsolved when the first version of this text was made. At least the fragment which we now have in the Berlin Turfan collection was probably written in the Mongolian period, so 13th, 14th century, because of the characteristics of the cursive Uyghur script. So it's also quite a difficult argument about the dating of the text. It's very serious, important problem for us to date the fragments. Normally, it's not really possible to give the exact date of the manuscript, but at least one feature which is very important for the dating of the text is the type of the script. It is written not a very beautiful way, so we call it cursive script, and tendentially we would say this script was often used in the Mongolian period, for us quite late period. It shows that the Uyghurs used such a kind of divination text in that late period. In the old Uyghur version, the hexagram sign is given at the beginning of the each result, and the old Uyghur translation of the sign and the explanation follow. So we can see one example. Hexagram sign is now lost here. I'm sorry. I quote here the translation, which was made by the Turkologist, a German Turkologist, Nicht folgender Sein. Deine Wahlen Bindel sind unterwegs, deine Befehle wurden ausgeführt. Wenn du seit langem ein Kind wünschst, so bekommst du es sogleich. Wenn du Hab und Gut wünschst, so bekommst und erhältest du es sogleich. Die Krankheit ist gewichen, mach dein Herz froh. Erde und Himmel bringe Freude da. Kommt at the beginning of the new one, so Hexagramm. And wenn dieses Zusammentreffen genannte Zeichen herauskommt, so sagt es durch sein Wort folgendermaßen: Grimmig, strenge, heftige Worte sind in deiner Gegenwart hochgekommen. Bind auf Bind, Bärte, brausend, unaufhörlich, bei deinem Haus, wenn du zur Krankheitszeit siehst. So if you compare the corresponding divination in each in Chinese version, you can see here, judgment maiden will be healthy. Do not use this divinatory information to take a maiden as a wife. Line 1. Tied to a metal cylinder, the determination is auspicious, ominous for going out and seeing someone, an emaciated pig. The captive is bulky. Line 2, there are fish in the slaughter house, it's the kitchen, there will be no misfortune. It will not be favorable to be a guest. Line 3. With no skin on the buttock, his walking is labored, threatening, but there will be no great misfortune. Line 4. There are no fish in the threatened house, ominous for rising to action. Line 5, wrap the melon with purple willow leaves, hold a jade talisman in the mouth. Something fell from the sky. Line 6, they look their homes distressed. There will be no misfortune. If we compare this part with Chinese counterpart, it is clear that there is no single parallel sentence between two versions besides the hexagram itself. Although the word Uyghur version uses the same name for the of the hexagram, it borrows neither the explanation method nor its contents. The differences between the Chinese and old Uyghur versions, however, do not exclusive to it. Because the old Uyghur version is preserved only fragmentarily, the structure of the whole text is still unclear, but several fragments follow each other and they show the order of the hexagram is not the same as the Chinese Yijin. For example, the seventh hexagram reading is followed by the 15-second bound. Those facts indicate that the old Uyghur version is not the faithful translation of the Chinese Yijin, which is now preserved. The divination texts from Central Asia, however, show us that there were different divination traditions with hexagram besides Yijin. From Dunfang, several fragments which belong to the text called Yi Sanwei are found. So you can see one example. Sorry, it's not very good to see, but here you can see the hexagram sign, and after that, the omen follows. In this text, the order of the hexagrams and the corresponding explanation obviously differ from those of Yijin, like the old Uyghur version. Between Yi Sanwei and the old Uyghur text in question, there are no parallel sentences, so that the latter cannot be the translation of the former one. But the existence of Yi Sanwei indicates that there were several Chinese divination texts using hexagrams, and the old Uyghur version could be translated from one of over some of them. In this context, it is worthy mentioning that the number of the Chinese divination texts based on the hexagrams from Dunfang is smaller than that of other divination texts. Thus, it is supposed that this type of the divination text was not a mainstream, at least in Dunfang. The questions whether the tendency in Dunfang area was different than Dunfang, or the divination based on hexagrams was especially favored by the Uyghurs with a certain reason, are still unsolved. but the cultural circumstances in that area surely played an important role for the spread of those texts. The Yijin is not the only divination text which was translated into Old Uyghur under the strong influence of Chinese culture. Recently, few of the important divination texts, Jincho, Kaiyuan, Changjin, and Yuxiaji, are identified in Old Uyghur. The first one, Kaiyuan, Changjin, was compiled by Gautama Siddha in the Tang period, second half of the 9th century to the first half of the 8th century, and explains the correlation between certain astrological phenomena and the good or bad things which could happen. In this text, several famous divination texts, including Jincho Xiangchen, compiled by Liu Bao, was quoted. One old Uyghur fragment preserved in Beijing National Library could be a part of this text. This fragment was written in semi-block Uyghur script which is an important feature for those which stem from pre-Mongolian period, so until the 12th century. The comparative study shows that the preserved sentences have a certain similarity with those which comes as a general explanation on the flying stars at the first part of the volume 71, Liu Xingchan, Divination of the Flying Stars. This part explains which type of the flying stars can be the sign for good or bad things and shows different description from several divination texts. Because no old Uyghur sentence exactly corresponds to Chinese one, it is difficult to determine which text the old Uyghur version was translated from. Considering the fact that the Turkic nomads, including the Uyghurs, also had a divination tradition in which the meteorological phenomenon played a relevant role, the possibility that it was compiled by the Uyghurs using their own and Chinese tradition cannot completely exclude it. It is still worthy of mention that such a text was written in the pre-Mongolian period. In that period, the Uyghurs accepted Buddhism and produced a huge amount of Buddhist texts in Old Uyghur, as it was already mentioned. In terms of their secular power, they established a diplomatic relationship between their neighbor states to leave an oasis state in Central Asia. From which social level the needs for such texts came, how they existed together with Buddhist divination tradition, which increasingly became stronger, and which Chinese group gave them the direct influence, are the interesting and important points for future discussion. The second one, Yuxia Ji, belongs to those texts which were popular amongst the general public and explain the divinations in uncomplicated way which were suitable for the use in everyday life. The detailed and comprehensive research on the establishment and the characteristics of this divination text is still lacking. At least it is pointed out that the oldest Chinese version, which is now preserved, probably goes back to the 15th century. In terms of the contents, the Yuxia Ji gives the information on which day one should do or may not do certain activities. Three different texts seem to have played an important role for its composition. So, Chu Sham Chen Liang Ji, Li Qi, Xu Chen Jun, Yu Xia Ji, Fa Xi Xuan Zhe Xi. While the first text shows a certain connection with the worship of ten kings for judgment in the intermediary world, the second and third one each have Taoist and Buddhist characteristics. The Yu Xia Ji was composed on the base of those three different beliefs directions and covered not only the needs of the common people but also those of ruling elite. So here you can see the Uyghur version. It's Chinese version. Up to now, several fragments which belong to Yuxia Ji were found in different collections. Many of them are preserved in the East Asian Library of the Princeton University, United States of America, and their digital images are available in the IDP database. The old Uyghur version is written in cursive script on the backside of block printed Tangut Buddhist text. So here is the front side of Tangut Buddhist text, and it's the backside. So that it definitely stems from the Mongolian period, 13th, 14th century. Furthermore, the Mongolian version, of which was surely translated from Old Uyghur, was also found. It means that The Chinese original Yuxiezi or similar text probably existed already in that period and was well known by the Uyghurs and Mongols. In the fragment shown as example, we found a circle in which the days in a certain month are classified. This figure corresponds to the Xia Yuan, Jianzhun, Shogun, Jishong, Jizu, which explains which day is good or bad for certain activity. As it is the case with the other old Uyghur texts, the old Uyghur version of the Yuxiezi does not exactly correspond to the preserved Chinese version in every sentence. It probably indicates that there was the old Chinese version which was widespread in the 13th and over 14th century in a certain region including Central Asia. But over the years, the other version became dominant. Anyway, the better understanding of the text surely brings to light not only the tradition of the old Uyghur divination literature, but also the history of the Chinese divination. In this context, it maybe has to be taken into consideration that the Yuxiezi is partly based on the worship of 10 kings in the intermediary world and contains a text which was connected with the famous Chinese monk Xuanzang. So I said, former time, those three texts which played an important role, and at the end here you can see monk, but it's not a kind of, it's not some monks, but it exactly indicates Xuanzang, famous monk from China. The existence of those kings, was known among the Uyghur Buddhists, and the Sutra of Ten Kings, which explains the process of the judgment in the intermediary world, was also translated from Chinese into Old Uyghur. It is pointed out that the worship of for Ten Kings and the Sutra were popular in Dunfang, and the Uyghurs seem to have shared that tendency. In terms of Xuanzang, his biography was also translated into Old Uyghur, and his Buddhist school, Yogacara, was introduced via Dunfang and seemed to have won a certain level of acknowledgement among the Uyghur Buddhists. Whether the popularity of Ten Kings and Xuanzang played a certain role for the translation of the Yuxiezi is still unclear, but it is an important point in the cultural history of the Uyghurs and Central Asia. The number of old Uyghur divination texts is not high comparing them with other religious texts or even with non-religious documents, but they show us the diversity of the Uyghur culture. Because of the fragmentary sources in old Uyghur, the comparative study is forced to stand much on the Chinese texts. And like Buddhism, Chinese divination culture also gave an important inspiration in many different aspects. Considering the political relationship between Uyghurs and Chinese from the 6th to 14th century, however, still the interrelated influence should be taken into consideration in a certain level. Furthermore, the source of Chinese influence is remained as an important discussion topic, especially between the second half of the 9th century and the 14th century. The Uyghur kingdom in Tufan had a continuous relationship with its neighbor Dunfang. The cultural and religious importance of this oasis at that time was often underlined, but there were also a certain amount of Chinese inhabitants under the Uyghur rule in Tufan. Whether those two Chinese groups kept their contact in spite of several political difficulties in that area and shared their cultural tendencies at all points is still unclear. The research on the divination texts in Central Asia will bring a small part of the society at that time to light and give us an important hint to reconstruct the Central Asian history and culture. So thank you for your attention.